This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures from yesterday off the Chicago Board of Trade were positive across the board. Corn up 3 to 5, soybeans up 6 to 7, and wheat in Chicago up 2.5 to 3. Even oats were higher on the Chicago Board of Trade. Been asked to start reading oat futures, so we'll start off today by saying that oats were up 1 to 2 cents on the Board of Trade. We'll get to the specifics a little bit later in the report. First off, in this morning's report, we'll take a look at corn. December corn futures posted a life contract high of 428.5 yesterday, Wednesday. Most of nearby contracts off of their highs, but added 3 to 5.5 cents to the upside on Wednesday. USDA announced a large export sale of 140,000 metric tons of corn to an unknown destination Wednesday morning. Most notably, that becomes China. EIA's weekly data release showed average daily ethanol production was at 962,000 barrels for the week ending on the 13th. That was last Friday. That's down 15,000 barrels a day from 2 weeks ago. Ethanol stocks were seen at 20.203 million barrels on the 13th last Friday, a 44,000 barrel a day increase from last week. Ethanol futures closed at $1.42 a gallon. That was even with Tuesday's report. And analysts are anticipating USDA to show between 600,000 and 1.2 million metric tons of corn bookings from the week ending on Thursday, November the 12th. Moving on to soybeans, your front month soybean futures extended the rally to new highs for the old crop contract. Even September and November of next year contracts posted life of contract highs. The board ended the day with 6 to 7 1/4 cent gains. Domestic soybean meal futures gave back their midday gains on Wednesday and closed down by 90 cents a ton. Bean oil futures were strong by 2 to 2.5% for new highs of December and March of next year's contract. Ahead of the USDA weekly export sales report that will be released today, analysts are looking between 600,000 and 1.2 million metric tons of soybean sales. Soybean meal bookings are expected to be 100 and 300,000 metric tons, and 800 to 40,000 metric tons of sales are expected for soybean oil. Moving on to your wheat highlights from yesterday, Wednesday. Front month wheat futures closed the midweek session with gains. Chicago Board of Trade soft wheat was 1 to 3.5 cents higher. Kansas City Board of Trade hard red wheat 4.25 to 5.25 cents higher. Spring wheat futures firmed by 1.5 to 1.75 cents higher on Wednesday. The 8 to 14 day outlook shows increased chances for above normal temperatures as we head into December with below normal chances at precipitation. The trade is looking at 250,000 to 500,000 metric tons of wheat business in today's export sales report. France Ag Maire raised their export forecast outside of the European Union for 2020-2021 from 6.7 to 6.85 million metric tons in their monthly sale and demand forecast. Their higher export future and domestic adjustments left ending stocks at 2.5 million metric tons. Japan is tendering 102,000 metric tons of wheat. Taiwan issued a tender for 82,220 metric tons of U.S. wheat with a deadline for November 25th. So let's recap your grain futures from yesterday, Wednesday, on the Board of Trade, which everything was higher across the board with the exception of soybean meal. Corn for December was up by 5.5 cents, 4.25 3/4. March corn up 3 3/4 at 4.30 1/2. May corn up by 3 1/4 at 4.33 at the close Wednesday. Soybeans, January up 6 cents, 11.75 3/4. March beans up by 6 1/4, 11.74 3/4. May beans up by 7 1/4 at 11.72. Chicago wheat, December up by 2.5 at 5.97 3/4. March wheat up by 3.5 at 6.06 1/2. May wheat up 3.609 3/4. Oats for December up by 1 1/4, 2.97 1/2. March oats up 2 at 3.13. May oats up 4, 3.14 1/2. Soybean meal December down 90 cents at 3.94.90 a ton. January bean meal down 90 cents as well, 3.93.80 a ton. Soybean oil, on the other hand, for December was up by 96 cents at 38.46. January bean oil up 90 cents, 38.21. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for yesterday's cash grain report.
This is Wednesday's report of grain price and trend prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain price were higher on Wednesday afternoon as demand is beyond expectations for soybeans this fall. In northern West Des Moines, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 6 to 12 cents at 398 to 416. Soybean bids were 6 to 9 cents higher at 1126 to 1157. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 6 cents at 406 to 424. Soybeans were 4 to 6 cents higher at 1138 to 1182. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were up 8-11 cents at 391 to 443. Soybean bids were 6 to 9 higher at 1124 to 1182. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 6 cents higher at 1168 to 1191. Basis was steady at 800 to 15 over the January. High pro soybean meal on a truck base offered at 396.90 to 404.90, down 90 cents a ton, with basis unchanged at 2 over to 10 over the December. Illinois corn processor case corn bids were up 6 to 11 cents, 421 to 448, with basis steady to up 5 at 500 to 22 over the December. Illinois river barge flooding elevators coated did produce corn bids 7 to 16 cents higher, 418 to 431, with basis up 1 to 10 at 700 to 5 over the December. Soybeans ended up 7 to 14 cents at 1146 to 1174, with basis up 1 to 8 at 1900 to 2 under the January. East St. Louis barge flowing terminals placed their producer corn bids 14 to 16 cents higher at 446 to 448. These elevators raised their soybean prices 16 cents, quotations 1185 to 1186. Soft wheat closed up 3 cents at 607 to 608. Milo ended the day 6 to 11 cents higher, 486 to 501. Contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 399 to 426. Soybeans at 1126 to 1157. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 412 to 433. Soybeans at 1153 to 1182. And in the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 414 to 454, soybeans at 1158 to 1202. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures report here on a Thursday morning. Yesterday, Wednesday, live and feeder cattle were lower. Hogs were mostly higher with the exception of the April of 21 contract. First off, live cattle futures traded lower into the afternoon round Wednesday, ending the day 42 to $1.15 lower. Feeders were also closing with triple-digit losses of as much as $2.42 in the nearby contracts. November feeder cattle saw a 35-cent drop to 137.02. Open interest in November was at 1,244 contracts as of Tuesday. They expire today. The Tuesday feeder cattle index was down by 17 cents to 137.38. The FCE online auction sold 543 head of the 930 listed for $100.25. USDA reported Wednesday sales mostly at the 110 level in all feeding regions. They did mention some light $111 trade for the higher grading cattle in the south and limited deals at $106 in the west. Dressed sales on Wednesday were mostly at $172, with some at $168. Wholesale box beef prices were up in the afternoon update, further widening the choice to select spread to $2.22 a hundredweight. Choice boxes were up another $2.12, $2.35.84 a hundredweight. Select was 34 cents lower, however, at $2.13.62 a hundredweight. USDA had estimated the weekly federally inspected cattle slaughter through Wednesday at 359,000 head. That's 7,000 head more than last week, and outpacing the same week last year by 1,000 head. Moving on to your lean hog futures, they rallied back to close the gap from the open, but they did finish the day mostly in the red. December and February futures closed the midweek session 27 cents higher, but the deferreds were at least 37 cents weaker on Wednesday. Pork cutout futures also closed mostly lower Wednesday, save for a 15 cents gain in February's contract. The CME lean hog index was 35 cents weaker on the 16th, that was Monday, to 69.73. USDA's national average base hog price for Wednesday was $58.65 after a 20 cent drop. The WCB regional base price was at $58.45, down 35 cents. USDA's national pork carcass cutout value was 92 cents weaker in the afternoon update, as a $7.90 increase to bellies was offset by reductions to other primal cuts of pork. Federally inspected hog slaughter through the week through yesterday Wednesday for hogs is estimated at 1.464 million head. Through Wednesday of last week, slaughter was at 1.440. The same week last year was 1.484. That sets this week at 24,000 head more than last week, but 20,000 head less than last year. So going back over your mixed but mostly lower livestock futures numbers from yesterday, Wednesday, off the Mercantile Exchange at Chicago. Live cattle for December down 67 cents at 110.65. February live cattle at the close Wednesday down 42, 113.15. April live cattle down 62, 116.62. Feeder cattle November down 35 cents at Wednesday's close, 137.02. Jan feeders down 242, 137.30. March feeders down 227, 136.90. December lean hogs were up by 27 cents at the close Wednesday, 65.80. February lean hogs up 27 cents as well, 65.90. April lean hogs down by 45 cents at 68.77. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Wednesday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Wednesday afternoon livestock report. Starting the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound pork carcass traded 20 cents lower, in a range of 51 to 59.75 with a weighted average carcass price of 58.65. From the Illinois Direct Sile Port, slaughter sile price were firm, with good demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows, 100-400 pounds, traded $32 to $36. 4 to 5 weighted $35 to $39. Over 600 pounds, $41 to $45. In the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were weak, with moderate demand for moderate offerings, ranging from $39 to $42. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts, a total $25,670. In the direct cattle trade, the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers and live basis trade at 106 to 112, and on address basis at 168 to 172. Choice heifers and live basis trade at 107 to 110, on address basis at 172. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was stash with 394 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was 77.68, which is 92 cents lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice and select beef carcasses are trading mixed. Choice carcasses were $235.84, which is $2.12 higher, while select carcasses were $213.62, which is 34 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter is estimated 119,000, compared to 115,000 last week, 119,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 494,000. Compared to 454,000 last week and 493,000 one year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by DeKalb Asgrow, by Linko Precision, and by the McAdams Millwright Service. Part two of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by Stein Seed, by the Montgomery County Farm Bureau, where membership means value, and by Seavers Equipment of Hamel, Hillsboro, Greenfield, Carlinville, Auburn, and Jerseyville. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here for Ag News on your Thursday morning. Pressure is now building for the United States to strike a bilateral trade deal with longtime Democratic ally Taiwan as a counter to China's growing power and influence in the Indo-Pacific region. Some see Taiwan as the tip of the spear in a U.S. economic, political, and military struggle with China. U.S. and Taiwan leaders are increasingly making the argument that a bilateral trade agreement between the two, who are already major trading partners in agriculture and technology, is key to stemming China's malignant behavior in the Western Pacific. Among them is the head of Taiwan's representative office in Seattle, Daniel Chen.
Taiwan is the seventh largest destination for U.S. agricultural products, and the second if you do that on a per capita basis, just behind Canada. Bearing those in mind, recently, Taiwan government decided to lift long-standing market restriction on U.S. pork and beef.
And that prompted Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Patrick Toomey, a member of the key International Trade Committee, to call for even closer economic ties.
I intend to introduce this week a Senate resolution in support of a U.S.-Taiwan free trade agreement. And again, the deal should be comprehensive. It should include everything: manufacturing, services, technology, agriculture.
Toomey is one of 50 senators who earlier signed a letter urging the Trump administration to pursue a bilateral trade deal with Taiwan, even though it put a China deal first. And President-elect Biden says he wants to wait on new trade deals. U.S. farm groups don't want to wait, according to U.S.-Taiwan Business Council Vice President Lotta Danielson, citing interest in trading key commodities.
So that's soybeans, that's beef, that's corn. And so the support is there from within the U.S., and that's why we created the coalition, you know, the BTA coalition, to try to kind of gather up all the organizations that want to support a BTA with Taiwan.
U.S. farm exports to Taiwan totaled $3.6 billion last year. The U.S. is Taiwan's top supplier of agricultural goods with 32% market share, followed by the European Union at 11%. In other ag news, when it comes to trade, many in agriculture are wondering what the future will hold under a Joe Biden administration when it comes to trade. Randy Russell is a former USDA undersecretary and the current president of the Russell Group in Arlington, Virginia. He spoke during a recent CME Group webinar and says things will look a lot different than they did in the previous 4 years.
The Trump administration focused, as you guys know better than anyone, very heavily on using tariffs as a means to an end. By that, to get people's attention and get them to the negotiating table. He certainly used it on the steel and aluminum tariffs with Canada and Mexico, made some threats on Korea before we got the chorus agreement put in place, negotiated a phase one with Japan, certainly imposed significant tariffs on China, and many of those remain.
He does give the administration credit for the Phase 1 trade deal with China. Russell says the next 4 years may be more about cooperative efforts, especially when it comes to dealing with China.
I think relative to China and new Biden administration, I think what you might see is two things. One is an effort to try to put more pressure on China by working with our allies, working with our trading partners to try to put some pressure on China. Number two is I think you might see them try to reduce some of the tariffs or eliminate some of the tariffs. I'm not saying all the tariffs, and see if there is a reciprocal action on the part of the Chinese to try to lower the temperature in the relationship.
He also looks at trade from the Chinese perspective and says it's very different from the U.S. way of doing things.
It doesn't matter who's president in their eyes. They are on a path over the next 20 to 30 years to get to a certain point economic-wise. And up to this point, I think it is pretty clear that they've stolen our technology. They've restricted our foreign investment. They have clearly taken aggressive actions against Hong Kong and the South China Sea. They've had human rights violations in the northwest section of China. And those are all going to be very vexing issues for the Biden team when they come in.
He also says China is going to continue to be a vexing problem for many administrations in the years to come. And in news from Capitol Hill, based on the results so far from the 2020 election, ag policymaking is going to look a lot different when the new Congress comes together in 2021. Longtime House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson lost his reelection bid. Ranking Member Michael Conaway of Texas retired, as did Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts of Kansas. Jay Truitt is the owner of consulting firm Policy Solutions, LLC, and he spoke during the 2020 NAFB's virtual convention. He says those changes alone mean policymaking is going to be quite different next year.
The leadership voids that have been created by the departure of some really key people end up being maybe the dominating factor in how the next Farm Bill comes together. This is nothing against who we all anticipate will be the new leaders that move into the House Ag Committee, and you can kind of start guessing at how it works out on the Senate side as well.
He says Congress will be missing a lot of experience when it comes to leadership in the next session.
You can't just remove a Pat Roberts and a Colin Peterson who bring 45 years of historical perspective and know all the mistakes that we've made, in addition to the things that we did that kind of worked right or that we could afford or that seemed to give us the biggest bang for our buck. You can't remove them from the process and just think it's going to be the same. The rest of the people that sat in those rooms don't have that same level of expertise and experience.
Truitt says the typical geographic divisions in U.S. agriculture will likely continue into next year, even with a new administration in the White House and new leadership in Congress.
We're still going to have Southern versus Midwest and some Northern and specialty crop versus everybody else. The livestock folks will pretend like they don't care what's in Title I and Title II, but the truth is it'll matter immensely what the conservation program looks like. President Biden promised that he was going to take a look at maybe doing more set-asides and taking some acres out of production. That'll send the fear into the livestock sector because they like oversupplies of all of those things to keep prices in a moderate level.
But what will the void in leadership mean when they start to write the new farm bill in Congress? Truitt says it probably won't mean substantial changes in the process.
I think kind of as in the past, somebody will rise to the occasion and we'll see somebody take those reins in both the House and the Senate, and they'll write the bill. I don't know that administrations in the end get to do more than just accept what comes to them for the most part. Maybe on money it's different, but on the actual policy, maybe it won't be as different as we think. But there is no way that you can deny that the voids created by Colin Peterson and Pat Roberts not being in the room, Mr. Conway as well, and a handful of other members, that'll be a game changer for some people.
Again, that was Jay Truitt, owner of Policy Solutions, LLC, out of Arlington, Virginia. In other news from Congress, more specifically the House, Democrat Sherry Bustos of Illinois and Republican Jim Hagedorn of Minnesota introduced the Streamlining Advanced Biofuels Registration Act of 2020 into the House of Representatives. The legislation would encourage low-carbon fuel producers and increase the production of cellulosic biomass into renewable fuels. It would expedite the approval process that the EPA does for low-carbon biofuel pathways, an issue that has stalled technological progress for years. Quote, unnecessary delays have stalled progress on biofuel industry's ability to harness clean energy from agricultural residue, corn fiber, and waste, says Growth Energy CEO Emily Score. We know that cellulosic technologies can reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 100% or more, providing options for negative emission liquid fuels and providing a low-cost alternative to petroleum-based aromatics that poison our air and threaten our health. She says the legislation will help jumpstart growth in these innovative technologies at a time when revitalizing rural communities have never been more important. A companion bill has been introduced by the Senate by Republican John Thune of South Dakota and Jenny Sheehan, a New Hampshire Democrat. And in today, Thursday's Feature Ag story, as growers have wrapped up harvest, farmer attention turns to preparing the field for the following spring. Fall fertilizer applications can offer many benefits to growers looking to save time and money. Steve Carlson is the Levasol and Crop Enhancement Manager with CHS Agronomy. He says soils need to have the necessary nutrients for crops in the spring and talks about why fall fertilizer application can be a big advantage for farmers.
It's really an ideal time to get a lot of those key nutrients into the soil ahead of that season. Applying phosphorus at that end of the year before that freeze can really help make sure that you have the things in place for that fall and growing season. So hitting that fall window when we have a fairly good fall conditions this year can really be an advantage for both time and making sure we got a great setup for next year. The other part I like too is when we make that application in the fall, typically we're getting some tillage or different incorporation methods to make sure more of that application is getting into that root zone or incorporating in that soil where we can really maximize the overall fit.
He says phosphorus is essential for plant growth and talks about why tie-up is an issue.
I really like what it does in terms of overall forming that building block. It's helping get that root germination and that strength of growth early in the season. Phosphorus is a key component in all those things. It's deficient in the majority of the soils that we deal with. And the reason that we see a lot of that overall deficiency is it's kind of tough in the soil. With the charge that we have on phosphorus, it often gets bound up in the soil with either key micronutrients or some of those other positive cations in the soil. So it can be micronutrients like zinc, iron, copper, manganese. Some of these other things can really bind it up. If we look at most soils, we probably only get about 20% of that phosphorus that we apply actually contributing to that crop.
That means the tie-up in the soil can cause farmers to lose up to 80% of their phosphorus application. Carlson talks about how farmers can avoid phosphorus getting tied up in the soil.
A great way that we can do that is incorporating a product like Trivar, which is a nutrient enhancement product. When we look at this product with Trivar, what it really does is it helps overcome that binding in the soil we see with those positive cations. A key component that we have in there is the Levasol chelate technology. And what this does is it prevents that binding from happening by freeing up those micronutrients and protecting that phosphorus to allow for more availability to that crop. So really a great fit in helping increase that overall phosphorus and micronutrient availability.
He also talks about how Trivar helps farmers get the most out of their application.
The other part that's really nice here is having multiple modes of action. Trivar as a secondary piece has a phosphatase enzyme, and this enzyme is present in every single soil globally, and it has one job. It converts the unavailable phosphate that's in that soil to a plant available form. Again, this reaction happens naturally in the soil, but with Trivar and impregnating it on that phosphate fertilizer, you're jumpstarting that reaction and beginning that conversion right away, making more of that phosphate available to that crop.
And for more information on Trivar from CHS Agronomy, growers can go to trivarfertilizer.com or contact your local CHS Agronomy representative in Shipman, Pocahontas, and Louder. And off the topic of fertilizer, we'll go right to the latest crop progress and condition report again from this past Sunday. This past report had no numbers from soybeans and corn, as they are both considered fully harvested across the state at 100%. The state yield at this point for corn is 195 bushels to the acre, and for soybeans, 58 bushels to the acre. And in the full report from the USDA NASS in Springfield, there were 5 days suitable to work in the field last week. Temperatures were more than 6 degrees above normal and rainfall was more than usual. Again, harvest across the state is all wrapped up for corn and beans. So state statistician Mark Sloysener takes a look at the winter wheat crop along with the state's pasture conditions.
92% of the Illinois winter wheat crop has emerged compared to 82% last year and 85% for the 5-year average. The condition of the Illinois wheat crop declined slightly to 10% very poor to poor, 24% fair, and 66% good to excellent. Pasture conditions were rated 34% very poor to poor, 23% fair, and 43% good to excellent.
And after this past weekend's rains, the average statewide topsoil moisture supply was rated 10% very short, 21% short, 66% adequate, and 3% surplus. And another ag news on the state level, most of Illinois can expect some more rain this weekend, and it comes just in time, as most of us will probably be sitting in the house anyway due to the new COVID restrictions. All jokes aside, Bryce Anderson serves as the chief ag meteorologist for DTN and has the details for this weekend's weather.
The moisture that we get this coming weekend is likely to be in the form of shower and thunderstorm action on Saturday and Sunday for the most part. And the models have steadily increased the precipitation totals that we could get. We could have a total of more than an inch of precipitation across much of northern and central Illinois this week. Southern Illinois maybe a little bit less than that, but I think you have to take the moisture and consider it as a benefit since there still is a pretty good portion of the Midwest east of the Mississippi that is on a drier note. So I think that that's going to be pretty useful, and there has been a chance or two to get field work taken care of after harvest. So I think this rainfall is overall going to be fairly well tolerated.
Anderson also sees temperatures on a more seasonable track for next week, the week of Thanksgiving across the state, with daytime high temperatures in the middle 40s to the middle 50s. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here on a Thursday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Thursday morning, November 19th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.